Episode 79, Manifest Destiny and the Wild West. Hi, my name is Clayton Mills. Welcome to A Short Walk Through Our Long History, a podcast where we look at the events of history and examine how those events shaped our modern world. Well, we're back in the United States again after talking about Queen Victoria and the British Empire. And honestly, I think I'm going to have to spend more time talking about the British Empire and how it grew during the 63 years of her reign, because Britain really did a lot of conquering and colonizing in that era, and that did have a big effect on our modern world. But I'm going to have to wait for just a bit, because the next several episodes, I'm going to be looking closely at things that are going on in the United States. We have to take a look at the Wild West and the Oregon Trail and the California Gold Rush. And then we're going to bog down just a bit on the American Civil War and its aftermath. And I don't think we'll come back to jolly old England until after that. Because in the middle of the 1800s until the late 1860s, there's just a whole lot of stuff happening in America that does truly shape our modern world. One of the biggest impacts that America had on the world in the mid-1800s was in the area of immigration. People from all over Europe took the giant risk of immigrating to America, lured by the offers of cheap or even free land in the open spaces of the American West. Between 1800 and 1850, more than 5 million people immigrated from Europe alone to America. Granted, that's only 2 years of immigration under the Biden administration, but back in the 1800s, it was a huge movement of humanity, something the world hadn't seen since maybe the massive migrations at the end of the Roman Empire. It was a lot of people moving to a new space in a short time. So when those people arrived, some of them were able to assimilate into places in the already settled East Coast, but most of the land on the East Coast was already owned by someone, especially the good farmland, so many of the new immigrants moved west. And at first, west was Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, and other territories east of the Mississippi. But people began to be lured even farther west. In 1850, there were about 23 million people living in the United States, and hundreds of thousands arriving every year, mostly from Ireland and Germany. On the west coast, tens of thousands of Chinese immigrants arrived, mostly to become cheap labor for construction projects. And all of this immigration from both east and west squeezed existing Indian lands. But the immigration and the national movement to the west began to take deep root in the national psyche of America. America, since its founding, had felt like it was sort of a new promised land, a new land blessed by God. And America felt like it had this special mandate from heaven to expand, conquer, and civilize, air quotes, the entire continent. This feeling included both a sense that it was spiritually important to convert the Indians and the other people they found out to the west, and also a sense that those people needed to be civilized. And of course, that meant making them a part of the American democratic experiment. Now, the Indians were naturally resistant to that, and they tended to resist and fight back. We're going to have to come back to this conflict between the Indians and the settlers after we get through the Civil War, probably spend a whole episode on it at that point. Anyway, America had this vision of itself as being sort of God's new chosen people, and the whole continent was the new promised land. Americans saw themselves as having a mission to spread constitutional republican government around the world, and also Christianity around the world, and also to spread American values and the American lifestyle. I'll come back to that idea in a minute. The phrase manifest destiny was used in 1845 by a newspaper columnist named John O'Sullivan, and it caught on as a short way of expressing the idea that America was destined to expand from sea to shining sea, as it were. O'Sullivan, who was, of course, the son of an Irish immigrant, hence the name O'Sullivan, used the phrase manifest destiny to support the idea of the annexation of the Republic of Texas and the Oregon Territory. It was our manifest destiny as a country to take those lands and civilize them. The phrase caught on, and it also reflected Americans' idea that their country had this special mission to spread the American political and social system around the world. Now, interestingly, Great Britain had a similar vision for itself. It felt like it had its own special mission to spread its own version of civilization all around the world, which was part of the impetus for the massive expansion of the British Empire. I mentioned a little of that last episode. America had a similar feeling about itself, and there have been several other empires in the history of the world that felt like they had this special mandate to spread their values around the world. The Romans, for example, also Charlemagne, Napoleonic France, and later, and in a more sinister way, Nazi Germany, Imperial Japan, and the Soviet Union. And now we have Communist China doing the same sort of thing. It's all a sort of an excuse for imperialist expansion, but some countries are trying to expand good, virtuous values, while other countries are just trying to expand their control over the world. And there's some of both of that going on in all this imperialist expansion. Well, back in the U.S. in the mid-1850s, one of the problems with expansion and manifest destiny was the issue of slavery, and more specifically, the issue of slave state representation in the U.S. government. New states like Missouri and Texas, which joined as slave states, didn't really have all that many slaves, at least compared to the Deep South. And the further west you went, the less useful slavery was as an economic driver. In other words, slavery didn't really help you out in the Wild West. But as the areas west of the Mississippi became more manifest and more full of immigrants, they all sought to join the United States. And under the terms of the Missouri Compromise, that meant that the states, the new states, south of the southern border of Missouri would come in as slave states, even if they didn't really have that many slaves or even need slavery as an institution. So here's the thing. Because of the expansion of the United States, slavery in the U.S. would have probably died out on its own. In the end, the expansion to the West and the Industrial Revolution would have probably ended it. But before that could happen, the United States ended up having a massive civil war, which we will be getting to shortly. Meanwhile, despite the tensions, America kept expanding West and feeling like it was America's duty to expand West all the way across the continent. But in doing that, America experienced something kind of amazing, and that is, America experienced the American West. It's so wide open with so much land, and some of that's rich farmland and ranch land. And then there's these incredibly picturesque mountains and fertile valleys and empty space. Well, mostly empty. There were Indians there. But the openness of it all left an imprint on the entire American consciousness that's kind of unique in the whole world. If you've ever traveled abroad and experienced other cultures, you may have noticed that people from other countries view Americans differently than Americans might view themselves. From the more negative point of view, Americans are seen as kind of rude, blunt, not respectful of customs and rules, maybe a bit too direct in their speech, maybe even a bit pushy. But viewing all those things from a more positive angle, though, American directness is honest and forthright rather than indirect and manipulative like some communication patterns in Europe are. Americans have a kind of get-things-done approach that doesn't put up with artificial or unspoken barriers or ridiculous rules. We just do what needs to be done as quickly and as directly as possible without waiting for the approval of every single person in the village. As an American value, people just take responsibility to do things, and then they just do them. Have you ever experienced that? I, myself, have gotten to travel a bit, and I've seen both sides of it. America has a different culture than its ancestor regions, including Europe, Africa, South America, the Middle East, and Asia. Have you ever wondered why that is, why American culture is so different? I mean, at the time of the American Revolution, American culture was pretty much just British culture. I mean, you know, rural British culture, colonial British culture, had some other cultures thrown in, Dutch, German, French, etc. But American culture quickly evolved into something very different. And one of the reasons for this difference is the Wild West. Here's what I mean. The British national psyche doesn't have cowboys. It doesn't have this sense of wild, open spaces to the west where there's no law, not much society, not that many people, where if you go there, you have to fend for yourself. You have to be able to fight and survive. In the American psyche, in America's view of itself, there's this deep-seated sense that who we are is this nation of frontiersmen. We Americans all, deep down, kind of view ourselves as Davy Crockett. It's just part of our national heritage. Cowboys, cowgirls, frontiersmen, frontierswomen, people who go out west and make it on their own. It's a powerful part of how Americans, even modern city dwellers, see themselves. Even more recent immigrants see that as part of what it means to be an American. And it's not just part of the mindset. There's also a set of values behind this. American values are, in many ways, frontier values more than city values or European values. Honesty, directness, kindness, helpfulness, as well as independence, self-reliance, a skeptical distrust of government and people in power. Those are all frontier values. Not putting up with too much BS or too many rules. Also, faith, community, hard work, and personal responsibility, but still taking care of the people around you and your community. All of those are core American values, although, sadly, a lot of that does seem to be fading in recent years. If you want a good picture of traditional American values, watch the old TV series Little House on the Prairie. It totally captures the values I'm talking about here in every episode. Pa Ingalls, the father in Little House on the Prairie, is the epitome of American values. Also, Clint Eastwood in most of his cowboy movies. You see, a direct-talking, kind of rough, even lawless cowboy is always seen as better than a smooth-talking city slicker, even if the city slicker is successful and is a lot cleaner than the cowboy. Watch just about any American movie with cowboys and city folks, and you know instantly who the good guys are. The cowboys. This is the whole premise of the Yellowstone 1883 and 1923 series that are on TV nowadays. Cowboy values, the cowboy way of life, the cowboy way of doing things is better, at least from an American perspective, than the city way of doing things. It's better than city values. And that set of values, those cowboy values, is at the core, or at least it was at the core, of American values. A lot of our values came from the old Wild West, from farms and from the country and from cowboys. You can see this nowadays still in all the Hallmark Christmas movies, all of which have the exact same plot. A cynical city dweller who doesn't like Christmas gets stuck in a small town over the Christmas holidays and falls in love with the small town way of life and with Christmas. See, all of these are reflective of American values. It's country values. It's cowboy values. On a more intellectual note, Robert Pirsig, an American philosopher and author who wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, also wrote another book called Leela. And in that second book, Leela, he makes the point that modern America is struggling with a breakdown in its values because its core values, which he says come from the Old West, are being replaced with big city values. And he makes the point that those big city values are just less successful at creating a good society. Instead, big city values, he often calls them Victorian values, are creating isolation. People being separated from a sense of society and from their neighbors. People becoming not independent or interdependent, but just becoming dependent on government rather than being self-reliant. People moving towards drug abuse and escapism and meaninglessness. And he's not wrong about all that. He also makes a very salient point that many of the values of the Old West are actually Indian values at their core, and that some cowboy values came from the values of the Indians. The Indian values that have become part of the American values include speaking directly, living independently, and also simplicity. You could also say that Indian and cowboy values include valuing freedom and independence over conformity to society and safety. But the American Revolution was also about those things, so it goes all the way back to the Founding Fathers as well. So, in the middle 1850s, America was busy spreading these values across the continent and assimilating Indian values as it grew, and also assimilating the ethos of the Wild West. By the end of the 1800s, America will have expanded all the way across North America, facilitated by growing railway lines and by brave pioneers who rode wagon trains across the mountains in search of new places to live. We'll come back to those pioneers, at least the ones who didn't die of dysentery, in a couple of episodes, but first, we need to go back to Texas for a moment and take a look at one of the most one-sided wars in history, the Mexican-American War.